everything has been sabotaged, and you can, so nothing on there can be eaten. And then, and so basically we have no gear for fish, we have nothing, we're just planning for two day trip, and now we are tripping over 10 days and without water and anything. And the first week and two, there's a couple rain drop and then you can catch it, and then we were surviving with a tablespoon or teaspoon a day and with no food, and our body is not shutting down
still,
after this month.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Grow Yourself Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin McNulty, and this is your personal development school of growth, where each week my guests and I will bring and break down big ideas and practices that will help you learn, grow, and succeed in life. Thanks for checking us out. Now let the growth begin. Welcome everybody to another episode of Grow Yourself, your personal development school of growth. I'm Kevin McNulty, your host, and I'm here to invite guests, have conversation about learning and growing and changing and improving your life. And my job really is to ask questions and to break down these ideas relative to personal growth and life that will help you. Today, I have a guest that I have, in all transparency, I have known him for a long time. In fact, his family and my family have been friends for many, many years. Gosh, it's been, I think, at least 15 years, maybe something like that. And my wife taught and is teaching their kids piano. So I know these people very well. But a few years ago, my guest's daughter wrote a book about my guest. And it was for a project, really, she had in high school. And I read it and was just completely blown away. I had no idea about what I was reading. And then I read it again, and I wanted to have him on as a guest for so long, and I just am honestly privileged that he's here to speak on Grow Yourself. And so my guest is Ken Chang. Kenneth Chang has over 20 years of management and leadership experience in the architectural design services. As he excelled in this arena, Ken was inspired to establish Signature Designs Group, LLC. That's his business, a design, build, construction management company, which has thrived in this community for more than 17 years. Ken has earned his Bachelor's of Arts from Spring Garden College in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and has his Master's in Architect from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. But let me tell you something, this is not what we're going to talk about. It's not about architectural design and all the incredible things that he does right now. That, what I just read to you, is a result of an incredible journey that we're going to talk about. It's mind-blowing. I'll tell you, the book, it's a short read, but it reads like this, like this suspense novel or something like this, but it's all true. And he's going to take me through the story. I'm not going to throw a spoiler out to you. I'm just going to invite Ken on right now and let him tell you for himself. So Ken, welcome to Grow Yourself. Thank you so much for appearing here with us.
Thank you. I'll be honored.
Well, listen, Ken, we've talked about this a number of times, and I'm just so glad to have you here as a podcast guest. But your story, that your daughter, Hannah, wrote, I'm sure, obviously, with your help and other people's help in your family, is just, I've heard stories like this before, but this is just incredible. And so I'm just so glad that you're here to tell us about it. Would you just, Ken, tell the listeners, just a little bit about, who you are right now, and then start from where you were born, and let's just go through the story. I mean, the story tells everything that our audience needs to know about you.
Maybe I go slightly further back and telling where I actually came from. Okay. My father migrated to Vietnam after the Japanese War, and he was a Japanese, trying to get into the pilot, fighting the Japanese, and he didn't qualify by any chance because of the health reason. And so he resided on the north side of Vietnam, and until the war was over, and then he migrated to Vietnam, and then he discovered the economic of Vietnam is extremely, you know, poverty at the time. And he established his business over there and then slowly moving his own parents over and siblings over. And then I was born there. And same thing on my mom's side of family. Also, my great from my great grandmom, great granddad migrated to Vietnam, and then my mom was born in Vietnam. So basically, both of my parents came from China, and migrated to Vietnam and been living over there for years.
So mm-hmm. they lived on in China, but as I recall, that it's mm-hmm. sort of on the border of China and North Vietnam is where it was, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And it's so directly above Vietnam is China.
Right.
Yeah,
so and so they then immigrated to North Vietnam.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then later to South Vietnam, to where South you were Vietnam. Born, correct?
Yes, correct. I was born in Saigon.
Yeah. In Saigon. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Saigon.
Now your father, I believe it was, or maybe even farther back, I'm trying to remember the chronology here, was quite successful though, correct?
He's a very, very successful businessman. I think I got a little bit of him, lucky.
I would say so.
Yeah, so he was a very successful entrepreneur. So nobody teach him and he just stumbling to his career by chance. So he did... have tremendous success in the lumber field of the business, and basically he buy lumber from the country and he mill it, and then he cut the wood into different sections and pieces and quality and sell for furniture for constructions. So he got four of those factory.
Wow. And this was in Vietnam, by the way, in South Vietnam?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so he has four factory that does all the milling and of course, a field that it's just a storefront to sell the lumber. But the milling factory, he got four of that. So, wow. Of course, he got several partners that helps him to run the other branches. Mm-hmm. And that's how this all came about. Being, importing... lumber logs from countryside that they cut down and they transport from boat. So from river.
Yeah.
And so that's how this is all started. After the communists took over and, life changed dramatically and,
Give
and,
us a year of, are we talking about just
1975 when the U.S. troops withdraw the North Vietnamese call it a victory, and then they came to the city, and then they start governing South Vietnam.
Yes.
And obviously they are communists, and then they took over the government, and everything changed.
Yeah.
From there on, everything changed.
Yeah. So before you go there, though, Ken, I would like to, because I want this context for the audience as you start to go through the story. Tell me a little bit about your mother and your siblings. Just let us know who they are.
Yeah, my father came from South China, where Guangzhou is directly above North Vietnam, and my mother is the province next to Guangzhou, also in a smaller village, and they both came from South China, so they all speak Cantonese.
Okay.
So northern China speak more likely Mandarin.
Yeah.
South China speak Cantonese, just like Hong Kong. Okay. So one language does not speak to the other. So so basically it's a completely different dialect for the language. But anyway, both of my parents came from South China and migrated to Vietnam. And my dad, I don't know what age he came to China, Vietnam. But assuming very young, so next time I will check with my mom, and I don't know that information. But anyway, of course, my father runs his own business, and my mom is a stay-home mom, and I have four other siblings, and one older brother and one younger brother and two younger sister. So I've been very blessed, and then we are very close in relationship and still is, and... that's a blessing. I know a lot of siblings don't talk and, they don't get along, but we do. And I guess it's a well raised for my parents.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
So let me just ask, as you recall, particularly when you were living in Vietnam, in Saigon, tell me just a little bit about what your mother was like. What was she like as a person, particularly back then? She's still alive, and I think where is she?
She's turning 84 in a couple of days.
Bless her.
83. I'm sorry. She's turning 83 in a couple of days, and she just a stay home mom, and you know, raising five kids and 1 year apart, and you can see the. And of course, she got a lot of help. Yeah. Being my grandmom is living with us, mm-hmm. and we also have a maid. And so with that help, and then you know, she raised five kids and 1 year apart. And of course, my sister's farther apart. Okay, so it's not no longer 1 year. The first three boys 1 year apart, yeah. and then skip two more years, and then I have sister, and then skip another 2 years to have the younger sister. So
wow. Are they so all it was in the States like now?
Short term, and all five kids are born. Yeah.
Wow.
She got her handful. Yeah.
Yes. I'm a product of five kids as well. So I get that. So 1975 comes around. The Vietnam War ended. The USA leaves. The communists take over. And tell us what happened from there.
Okay. As soon as they take over, and obviously the first thing they do is they change the currency. Okay. So, I mean, most people, you know, earn their living and put money in the bank, just like us over here, because we're living in a governed by US, and then we have the same democracy and over there until the commons took over. And they changed the currency, you know, whatever the currency at the time is no longer valid. And they changed that. And you bring in bags of currency, and then you only allow by headcount. And headcount meaning the government say, hey, you have seven in your family, and then you know, I don't know the amount, you entitled 2,000 per adult and 1,000 per kid, and that's you bring in million, you only get that amount.
Wow.
By headcount.
Wow. So to be clear, okay. though, that all the money that you had or that your father and mother had as a family is gone. So it's
depleted. So it's just no longer valid. It's no value to it.
Goodness.
So they didn't do it one time. They did it three times.
Oh, wow.
So the first time around, they, you know, exchanged a lot more. Second time, they strip it down. The third time, you know, they limit it by headcount. And so basically, they make sure you're poor.
Yeah.
They make sure you're poor. And they make sure that they have better control of, you know, what they tell you to do. Mm. So, of course, you know, it's just no different from any communist. You know, it's a sweet talk. And then, you know, they're getting you into a different, you know, scenario. And they limit you what you can buy, you know, from the zone that you're living in.
Yeah.
And you got to go to the governmental facility to buy meat, to buy, you know, daily product, and they only limit you know, what you can buy. And obviously, you know, you're limited with, you know, money too. So so basically they limited you what you can get. And at the time, and of course, you know, they not just doing, you know, currency change, but they start taking over businesses. Okay. They started with business importing and exporting, and you know, they took those business first, and they expelled those people to countryside. This is the reasoning. They said, you know, you got your life well before, and then now it's your turn to go to the country and to do the farming. They took your business.
Wow.
Yeah.
So took your father's businesses, right?
My father was a local business, and it was the last they took. So, but they did take over. They took everything, you know, all factory and all storefront, and you know, they took everything. And then my father is the labor now. He's no longer in the office and, you know, directing what to do and what to, you know, to run the business. And he's now at the factory and milling wood, and come home with backache. You know, I mean, when you're not in that for years, and then now you into labor, and it put toes on your body. And then of course my father was aging too at the time, you know, he's in the middle of 50.
Yeah.
Yeah, so came home backache, and they depleted your wealth, and they took over your business. It's no longer yours, and what's left for you? No life. Yeah, there is no life. And then as a kid, I remember we have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and then line up in the cemetery, and you have to do exercise as they told you to. Sing the stupid song, the government song. Yeah, I mean, we wake up and then we started at 4 o'clock in the morning in the wow. cemetery. Why? Exercise.
Why the exercise? I mean, they didn't
want because to they be tell healthy. You to. Because they tell you to.
Just it.
I mean,
it.
You know, there's no reason. They said it's good for you. You got to go.
Trying to you take control of your group. Mind and your body. I see.
Yeah. So they set the rule. Basically, you have to you have no way not following it. Right. You know, because you have to follow. They tell you so, and you have to do it. So as a kid, you know, waking up 3 o'clock in the morning and jumping, you know, hoop, you know, over the cemetery, you know, kid don't know anything better.
No,
and then just having fun, I guess, you know, didn't know what's, what's
you
better.
Do you recall, Ken, what was kind of, what was going through your mind at the time as a 12-year-old kid? I mean, do you recall sort of what was, I mean,
it's I mean,
were you just confused?
We know,
or?
We kind of know, but we don't know a whole lot of changes because it's all burdened to the parents. The parents doesn't tell us about, hey, we are in financial situation. Hey, we are about to lose everything. You know, we don't know any of that until, you know, when we become adult. And at the time, we just, you know, like normal kid, you know, we do whatever people tell us to do.
Right, I see.
And then we don't know any better. To be honest with you, I don't recall any better or worse during the time of communists, but we just did what we told to do. So
interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So they took over your businesses and you all now are poor. And and so what happens next?
Okay. My mom is a very smart woman. Okay. My dad makes, you know, bags and bags of money every week. So my mom already, you know, foresee that, you know, this is coming. And she already told my dad, hey, let's get the money, go to Hong Kong and buy a property. And then, you know, move the family over there. So she feel that this is coming. My dad said, no, US will not lose the war. And we're not going anywhere. And besides, you know, my money needs to be reinvest and then, you know, build the business, you know, bigger and bigger, you know, just like any typical businessman. And they strive for different opportunity and things like that. But my mom, you know, whatever my dad allowed my mom to have to run the family and in any addition money, my mom bought gold. Gold, what is saving our lives.
Wow.
We didn't have a whole lot of gold, but we lived off gold for 3 years. We live off gold for 3 years. Every month, my mom has to sell some gold. So in Vietnam, we go by gram. We didn't go by ounces. So a stick of gold has 2 pieces. And then every month, my mom have to sell one of that to live, just to live. Yeah.
Wow. But she
because
sure
my dad is no longer, you know, generating income. So they limit you what you make. They limit you, you know, what. So therefore, we have to have a supplement kind of money.
Yeah.
Where you can get supplement money, you can do a part-time job over there.
Right.
And then, you know, other than that, you sell your belonging.
Right.
Yeah, so we fortunate that my mom did, you know, save up some gold that my dad was not aware about.
He didn't know she was saving it?
He probably know, but not knowing how much she had.
I see.
Okay.
Interesting.
So then we live off gold for 3 years. And then my mom, she's the one who plot this whole thing now. And I find this fascinating myself too. Being a woman, never have one day of education. My mom does not have a chance to go to school.
Wow.
Because my grandmom is very poor. My grandmom was being a widow when she was 29 with six kids. My mom is the fourth one. So just to make it short, and then, you know, they struggle. They don't even have anything to grow up with. So my mom came from very, very poor family because of the granddad died, and then she's 29. She struggled with six kids. But
Wow.
anyway, with the help of uncle, of course,
Yeah, right.
to raise
Sure.
to raise and all that.
Yeah.
But my mom never have a chance to go to school, and she when she turned 20, 21, and she decided to get herself into school, and she did go like not part time, but like night school to learn the Chinese.
I
She
see.
had 2 years of that. Okay, but she is a very smart woman. With the 2 years of education today, she can read all the paper.
Wow.
She can read paper. She can read the Bible, the Chinese Buddha Bible,
Wow.
and she I mean, she just pick up things quick and as smart and I hope I got a little bit of my mom too.
Yeah,
So
I'm pretty sure you
she is a
did.
super smart woman, and then she
Yeah.
see this is coming, and she
Yeah.
see all this is happening, and my dad know that, hey, now we broke, and where are we gonna get money to leave the country? My mom said, let's do this.
So let me just stop you there though, Ken, because you said that your mom with virtually no education plotted this whole thing. So obviously the audience doesn't know where you're going with this. So what did she plot?
Okay, so because you cannot survive over there by breaking your bank and selling one stick of gold every month, and so my mom see hey, there's no future. You don't see the light in the tunnel, so you don't know what to expect next. So my mom know that our business is depending on the country people to ship us log. Okay. So with the partner of shipping, they have boat, but each member 10 stick of gold. It's already been people are trying to escape the country, and that's been the norm of what's charging 10 stick of gold per person, five maybe five seven stick of gold per kid.
So your
Okay.
mother is plotting this plan to escape the country,
Yes.
and she knows this person who has a boat who will help you all escape.
Yeah.
But he's charging 10 sticks of gold for each person, and there's seven of you.
Yes. So this person is Mr. Yun. Mr. Yun is a partner of my dad, and he takes care of the import and export, and my dad received the product he bring. And then my mom know Mr. Yun has the bow and have the ability to
I see.
escape.
Yeah.
And then my mom proposed to my dad, let's get Yun to come to our house, and then I prepare dinner and let me take care of the conversation. My dad say, no, it cannot be done because we don't have that money. We don't have that money to even or not even close to get one adult to leave, And my mom said, don't worry about it. Just bring him there, and then we start a conversation, see where it take us to. And then, like my mom, during that 3 years of, depleting our wealth and living off gold, and my mom turned help, my mom turned, you're getting into a depression. And my mom feel like, she's losing it, and she turned to God. Okay, she find faith in God. So she start, going to temple, and she's loving it. And that's how she spend her time, just like us over here going to church. Over
Yes.
in Asia, we go to temple, okay? And then she find, faith over there, and then she's loving it, and she establish a lot of friends over there for that 3 years. And then of course, I jump out of a little bit of the content. And when Mr. Yin did come to our house for dinner, and my mom said, hey, Mr. Yin, is your boat, when is your boat ready, and whether you still can accept more people. And Mr. Yin said, no, we just started it, and then we still accepting people. And my mom said, look, this is my five kids and me and my husband, and then I have another cousin and her kid. coming along with us. It's 9 of us. How much is it going to cost us? Okay. And Mr. Yin, you know, did a little bit thinking. He said 47 grand. It was really cheap.
Cheap,
so,
yeah.
Because there's a bunch of kids.
Because typically only it was three about adults. Half, basically, because that would have really been 90.
Right. So, okay, so basically you, he took half because of the relationship of my dad. My mom said, Mr. Yin, I have all my siblings in Hong Kong, which is true. All my uncles and aunts live in Hong Kong, except us living in Vietnam. And my mom said, Mr. Yin, take my 10 grand. I'll bring you the 30 grand, you know, next couple of weeks. The last 7 grand, when we escape, you know, I can get it from my sibling and pay you back. And Mr. Yin was so generous. He said, since, you know, you saying that, I'll take 40. He eliminated 7. My mom right there and then gave the person, Mr. Yin, 10 grand right there to for deposit to make sure that we're in it.
Yeah.
So where are we going to get that 30 grand? Okay. Because we still have to save some for living. We don't know when we can leave. Sure. So we can only afford to, you know, put in 10 at the time. And, you know, with 5 kids and with, you know, with no job and no income, and it's, you know, it's very, very stressful. But she turned to the mom. Okay. Hey, mom, you know, I don't remember her name or you know, their name. And, you know, hey, we are plotting a boat escaping, and it's 10 grand per person. And it's super safe. It's because it's our partner. The monk say one word, everybody believe it. Just like, you know, you go to the church, and then if the pastor will say, hey, you know, this is what you should do, and, you know, and people will listen.
So the monk is like the spiritual leader?
Spiritual leader.
Okay.
And then he said, Mrs. Chen is plotting a boat, and it's 10 grand, and it's very safe, and then there's, you know, because when you do all this, it's got to be under, sure, underground, under the, yeah, you know, underground, under table. The government, yeah, cannot know, yeah, about this.
And you don't know who to trust.
You,
exactly.
You go to jail. Yeah. You go to, yeah, jail. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my mom plotted all that, and then, you know, let the word out in the temple, and the monk automatically, you know, express it out to, you know, some of the people over there. And of course, among those people, some of them is super rich, super wealthy,
wow,
put it that way.
How
so the monk said, hey, this woman with the son is very wealthy, and the husband already passed, and they want to leave. They want to be make sure it's safe. And my mom said, 30 grand. They said, no problem. I'll bring you 30 grand. That's how my mom got the 30 grand.
Wow.
I find that out, you know, after the fact. And wow, my mom told me all this story, how we came up with the money.
And so it's, you knew her as mom, but she was a businesswoman too.
Yeah, she plotted all this, and she planned all, wow, this. And then waited. 1 year went by. The boat's, wow, still not ready. Because a lot of prep work to do, and a lot of, you know, strategy to set, sure, and so forth. And then guess what? The lady and the son said, I'm backing out. There are bigger boat now, bigger ship that I can park. I'm not going to come with you. My mom said, how am I supposed to pay you back the 30 grand? We already deposited it. We didn't, you know, she said, don't worry about it. I'm not taking it.
Wow.
Yeah. You can, you know, because I decided to leave, I'm not taking the money. And guess what? The monk take over the seat, the 2 seat, the monk.
Wow.
So she took over the 2 seat, and then she got a goddaughter coming with her, and then waited another months and months go by again. Didn't happen. She decided not to go too. And then she sold the 2 seat to a lady and a young a teenager, like 19 years old. Yeah. So she said, I can't go with you now, but I sold my two seats to this two person. So she took the money. Actually, she made that money. So basically, it was a blast that that teenager and this woman came with us. She did tremendous amount of help during the course of escaping. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so because we are so young. We are so young. My mom and my dad cannot handle all five. Yeah.
So let me kind of push this forward a little bit here. So at what point did you finally get ready to leave? And did anything significant happen between now and the time that you get ready to leave, just so that I don't want to skip an important piece here?
No, other than, you know, struggle to daily life. And then my mom has to learn the path of, you know, all the plot, you know, you have to go down to the countryside. And then you got to learn the path where to get to, you know, from a little boat under the you know, it's in the picture that on the book, you know, you go under, you know, where they take a dump. That's where you go down. And then that's where the river. So you go to a little tiny boat that could fit 2-3 people. They rowed you out to a medium sized boat that has a small motor that could fit maybe 5-7 people. And then that, you know, you go to the canal. And you go to the final boat. So it's a 3 trip. So my mom has to go down to the country and learn that path.
I see.
And, you know, it's not like over here, hey, we have a street name. No, it's a country. It's a country. Dirt road, and it's just, you know, all over the place. Houses are all over the place. You got to learn the path, how to, you know, navigate to the...
So she would go by herself to learn the path, and then...
She got a friend, you know... to go with her. Friend is also came with us on that. My mom did introduce 3 more friends, you know, a lot to Mr. Yin, so that Mr. Yin can make up the money. So each of these person does paid in 10 to 15 grand. So Mr. Yin ultimately did make his money through the relationship and the recommendation from my mom. The long story short, you know, being a Chinese woman, nowhere near looking like a country woman, you know, darker complexions and, you know, the dress and all that. I mean, you know, you just don't look like a country person. So when you go down there and then you're going to be spotted, you know, just like that, because, you know, it's just like, you go into Africa, people are going to see you. Hey, you stick out like a sore thumb because you don't look the same.
Right.
So my mom was really, you know, afraid, you know, get caught and not being able to come back. You know, if you get caught, you're in jail, you're not coming back, you know. So my mom was really scared to learn, you know, just go down to the country. And then she got dressed, you know, like a country woman, and, you know, and you have to file to the government, say, hey, I have to leave this city and I have to go to this country. You have to tell the government, because along the way they check on you. You have to have paperwork to tell them where you're going. So my mom did apply to all that and go to the countryside. Long story short, she did navigate to the you know, to learn all the path. And she came back safe and sound.
Did she write it down or did she just memorize it?
No, she memorized. Like I said, my mom is a super smart woman. She memorized. And she does have the navigation system in her. See, I 2 times I'm lost. And she just know where she's going.
Wow.
Side note, my mom doesn't speak English, but she travel around the world.
Wow.
She go to Hong Kong, she go to China by herself, she come to Tennessee, she go to Hawaii to visit me by herself.
Wow.
I mean, she's an amazing woman.
Wow.
This is all she learned. She's coming to Hawaii, all she learned is Honolulu.
Wow.
And then when she go to the airport, she said, hey, mister, can you tell me where to go? I need to go to Honolulu. And people would direct her, hey, you got to go to this gate. That's all she learned. She learned what she need at the moment. And she be able to travel by herself.
Yeah.
And so.
Okay. So take us, Ken, to leading up to the time that you're going to leave now, Saigon.
Okay, so when the time's up and then we all bundling into a army type of, you know, truck, and then the surrounding broken furniture and cage of chickens and pig, and just, you know, like a livestock and thing, you know, humans are buried in the middle. So we have to be, you know, covered with blankets and, you know, literally hidden inside the truck.
Wow.
Even to get on that truck, we have to, you know, leave like midnight. So there's nobody out on the road. So we parked it right behind our factory, so nobody ever go there. And then that's where we take off. And then we all got on. The trip took us 1 day, a little bit over 1 day. In July, in Vietnam, whew, you can imagine the humidity.
I can imagine. And how many people?
No.
How many people?
Was I don't remember. It was like over 20, 30 people in this truck. Inside the truck.
In July.
It was like a sardine. Yeah, it was like sardine and packed in there.
Wow.
So there's no room for leg and no room for, you know, leaning over or something. Yeah. So we're literally, you know, rubbing each other. And but the bouncing with, you know, unpaved road, and when you go down to the country and then you can only go so fast, and it was dusty and it was hot, it was humid, and it was inside the canopy, yeah, under the truck.
Yeah.
And it was 1 day trip to go to Kamau from Saigon.
So, but let me ask, Ken, so do you recall, so you're in this truck laying down?
I don't remember. Probably sit up. I remember like sitting up.
Do you remember what you were thinking, though? I mean,
scared?
Do you remember? You were just scared.
It was
scared.
Just scary, yeah. Scary moment, just because of my mom. We totally aware what we're doing, because my mom could speak to us. You know, when every time Mr. Yun come over to our house for a meeting, for the next to strategize the trip, and so we were aware of that we are escaping.
Right. Yeah. So what was, but I'm curious about this, Ken. What was she saying to you and your siblings about what's happening here? I mean, was she just sort of pragmatic and straightforward, or was she encouraging, or she just made it happen? I mean, I'm curious about what she was conveying to you all about what's about to happen here.
Well, since we are aware what the escape is, because, you know, during that 3 years, and, you know, people's been talking about, you know, escaping, being caught, being killed, being, you know, we already aware what to expect. So as 12, 13 years old, and I understand things.
Yeah.
And only my two sisters might not, you know, she's six years old.
Yeah.
And for being 12, 13 years old, I understand things pretty well. You know, even the meeting in our house, and then we are playing and banging up the sound just so that the street people past our house will not know what's going on, and kind of things. We kind of, you know, deflected the situation when they have a meeting.
Well, yeah. May I ask real quick, though, what about your father at this point?
Oh, my father was with us along with this whole trip.
He was just following your mom's lead on this?
Yeah.
Very
so
nice.
Because of being my father being a connector, I call it a connector.
Yeah.
Without my father, we cannot connect it to Mr.
Yeah.
Yin.
Yeah.
And then my mom is just a plot.
It's
just
plan.
A thinker in behind.
That's
and my
incredible.
Dad is actually doing the real thing by him with Mr. Yin.
That's fantastic.
Okay, because they are partner.
Yeah.
Okay, so my mom is the thinker in the background.
Yeah. What a great combination, honestly. I mean, you know, one is the, I guess you could say, the influencer.
It's
and the
a doer.
Other one is,
and then it's a thinker.
Wow.
You have a doer, you have a thinker.
Wow. Wow. Okay, so you're in the truck. You've traveled. You're traveling for a day.
Yeah. We finally landed in Kamau, where my mom. See, this time we don't have paperwork. It's just sneaking into the country. It's like we're moving to the country, and the government will not stop you. They encourage people to go farming. Okay, when they see truck like that, looking like, you know, you're moving to the country, they don't stop you. Just because you are moving to the country, they encourage you.
I see. Very interesting.
Okay, so we down in the country, safe and sound, and then it was pouring down rain, and it was 6 o'clock in the morning, and the sun started, you know, I mean, the sky started lit it up a little bit. It was kind of still dark when we land, when we park over there. And then we all put on a raincoat and cover. And that gives us a good excuse to hide who we are in identity. Because, all the city kid and all the city people don't look anywhere near the country people.
I see.
Because our complexion is different. Our facial and our attire is different. So we, even though we dress up like country people, and you know, we still look different. And then we be able to, you know, every, that's when the two teenager and the woman, young woman come along with us. She's the, they are helping us, because my mom, there's no way to haul five kids, you know, or you know, to bring five kids with her. You know, you stick out like a sore thumb already. You're doing
well,
that.
She's focused on the plan, you know, so she wants to probably keep her mind.
So basically we follow her. Okay. So we break up two kids with one adult, and then we just follow one to the other.
Yeah. Okay.
So instead of traveling, you know, like a duck crossing the road.
You will
stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, yeah,
so basically, we on in raincoat. It was pouring down rain, and people are not out on the street because it's, you know, it was God help. Okay.
Yeah.
And so we follow three people at a time, and then we get to the same, you know, like I told you earlier, you know, to that little hut, and then we ladder down to the to the dirty water and get on a small boat, and then get into the bigger boat, and that period of time, we didn't have water, we didn't have food. By the time we got onto the main boat, that was already 2 days. So during the course of going from a middle boat to the big boat, that little girl already screaming. She's already screaming, "I'm drowning you, I'm killing you."
But tell us about this little girl a little bit though. So where did she come from?
She is just another member, you know, to join up.
With your group, or they came with another group?
We all gathered to leave from there to get to the big boat.
Gotcha.
We all came from different part of the city.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't know each other.
Yeah.
We do not know each other.
Yeah.
So my mom came from Saigon. They may come from, you know, wherever. But anyway, they, you know, she was.
Tell us about this little girl and the mom, though, about where they came from, because that's an important part of the story later on.
Yeah, they also like Chinese people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just like us, and I don't know what they do.
Just some random people that were part
of
this.
Just random people with a 2-year-old kid.
Yeah, but you said the 2-year-old kid started acting right from the beginning, very odd, right?
Very odd to be, you know, according to the parent, she does not say things like that. She was never exposed to water. She was never exposed to, you know, countryside.
Oh.
And nobody taught her that, you know, "I'm killing you, I'm drowning you." You know,
yeah.
I don't know where that came from.
Yeah. But let me back up just a second, Ken, so just to make sure that the people listening, because I've read the book and they don't understand. So you all arrive in this place to then everybody get on the bigger boat.
Uh-huh.
And this woman and her 2-year-old little girl came and like you just said, they seemed rather normal, right? And the mother, you know, said that she didn't know anything about the water or any of these sorts of things. But suddenly this little girl starts saying things to you, right?
Or well, just screaming.
In general, or just screaming.
Screaming.
What She's was she screaming?
"I drown you and I kill you."
I mean,
"Drowning you, killing you." And guess what? She's speaking Cantonese.
Wow.
You can't speak Cantonese in the country and you'd be, you know, spotted right away. And then, of course, you know, the teenager that came with us is the one that held her down.
I see.
And the parent didn't have the gut to, you know, kind of suffocating the kid. And you do whatever you want. We don't want to get caught. And, you know, you silence the kid. And otherwise, we all get caught. And from that middle boat to travel to the final boat on along the canal, you know, windy canal. And literally, you know, pitch dark. You can't see anything. But the kid,
who knows who's where and who's listening? Yeah.
Yeah. So the little kid is screaming. And then they were silent until she was like suffocating, cannot breathe. And then they release her. The moment you release her and she catch up with her breath and she's screaming again.
Wow.
And then, you know, during that course, I don't remember how long that course was, but it was scary. As a kid along on that boat, it was scary moment, knowing that we can get caught. Yeah.
So, I mean, it sounds like two things were going on here. Yeah. One was just the fact that she was screaming and making everybody nervous that you're going to get caught. But the second thing is what she's screaming. I'm going to drown you. I'm going to kill you. I mean, this is a two-year-old child.
Yes, so two-year-old child, never exposed to water, and nobody taught her how to say stuff like that.
And so
it came out of nowhere. The parents said it came out of nowhere.
Okay.
It was just like so weird things happened, what it happens, and it just kind of weird, you know, where the little girl picks up stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then we finally saved to get on the big boat.
Okay.
And the big boat was prepared with a lot of water for a two-day trip.
Okay.
Okay, so it was like...
two-day trip.
Yeah, the 20-gallon plastic can, they have maybe 30, 40 of them. But as soon as, you know, all people got on board, it was 104 people. And we are traveling 2 days in the hot, humid day and never have food and water. Guess what? We literally almost consume all of it already.
Wow.
104 people, you know, got on that boat. It was not much left after we all got on board.
Wow.
And then it was those drinking water was prepared for the trip for 2 days from Kamau. And we were hoping to get to Malaysia because that was the shortest distance, traveling distance.
I see.
And then...
Now the boat barely fit all these people, right?
It's not fitting. I can tell you how big the boat is. It's 15 meter by 3 meter. 3 meter is 15 feet wide.
15, so 3 feet?
75 feet long.
For 104 people.
104 people. It's just exactly like the movie they made for, you know, the refugee that escaping.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally, you know, sleeping on the deck of the boat and hanging around the boat and everywhere on the boat.
Yeah.
So you pack like a sardine. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to see if, I don't know if we can do this. I'm going to try to put this boat. This is just a picture of it from the book.
It just looked like that.
You know,
I find the closest picture I could what I remember, and it just looked like that.
That's crazy.
It's a human boat, and it's all just filled up with human. Yeah.
Okay.
And you got no place. So basically, we all got on board, and then we all finally take off. And the moment we take off, and then, you know, we, like I said, the 2 years of strategize to leave the country for being, you know, learning people to get to the path and get to the place, and, you know, go navigating to the route. And they bribe all the gate, you know, the river, you know, where you're exiting the, you know, from place to place, and, you know, they have guards.
And they're bribing them? Oh.
They all been bribed. They all been paid.
Of course.
And say, hey, this time, this moment, and this boat will be, you know, going through.
Yeah, just look
the other way. So they all been bribed. And then, you know, of course, you know, when we get to that point, and then we full throttle on the boat.
Wow.
And then they still have the duty to do what they need to do. They shoot at us.
I see.
They bomb at us, but they intentionally miss.
I see.
So they shoot, they aim high, they miss the whatever they launch. Yeah. But you do hear that, you know, we get shoot at, and you see bullet hole all over with the sun ray coming in the bullet hole the next day. And so we escaped full throttle, and then my mom covering all five of us on top of us. And so we literally, you know, on the bottom of the boat. And one lady was unlucky. The bullet somehow landed on her stomach and she passed. Nobody even know. She was 21-year-old young lady, got killed from a bullet.
Oh, wow.
And the very next day, we blessed her. We put her body into the ocean.
Sure.
And that was the first time everybody started throwing up, you know. You cannot imagine how bad the smell is. It's a dead person overnight.
Yeah.
With the blood. Yeah. So we are throwing up like crazy. Yeah. So since we are city people, we're not used to the motion of the boat rocking.
Right.
And so that's the first time I throwing up, you know, anything and everything I had in my body.
Wow.
Well, I still remember that moment. I still remember that moment, you know, carrying out her body.
Yeah. And that's no small matter, because the fact that you are throwing up, I mean, you are throwing up liquids too, right? So, and you need.
Oh yeah. Yellow
whatever
liquid.
You have, you need.
Yellow liquid, the bitter liquid. Yeah.
But I'm saying that this is going to further dehydrate you. Wow.
We already dehydrated and hungry at the time.
Yeah.
There's no food for 2 days already.
Wow.
Okay, so basically we full throttle, we continue, you know, after we pass the gate, we're in the ocean now. So we all celebrating at the time.
Mm.
hey, we pass this and we save, and then now it's just a target.
Yeah.
And then the target will be 2 days, and then we'll be at Malaysia.
Wow.
And that's what's planned. Okay. Guess what? 3 hours later, the pump blew up.
Oh, wow.
Overheated. When it blew up, the cover on the boat got blew off. That's good. Lucky nobody was sleeping on top of it. If there's somebody sleeping on it, it's gone. So the lid got blew off. The engine was completely dead from that
full
moment.
Blown explosion, huh?
Yeah. Because it was full throttle, and then we came to find out our boat was sabotaged. Our boat was sabotaged. So basically, when we pay to the people who prepping the boat and getting water and food on it and hiring a driver, the boat driver, which is we call captain, which is a countryman over there. Mm-hmm. And he got 10 kids, but he only brought one kid with him, the youngest son, with him for that trip. He didn't bring any of his family except one little kid with him. And we believe he's the one who sabotaged the kid. And then we found out there's a bar soap. In Vietnam, the soap, it comes in a square bar, like two inch by two inch, but 1 foot long. And then you cut it into a section, and when you use it, he stuck the whole bar soap into the exhaust pipe. That's when it, that's what sabotaged the engine being overheated.
But why would he do that? I mean, because so that he wouldn't have to travel?
His intention is that he wanted to get caught. He already got the money for his family.
Oh, God.
He wanted to go back.
I see.
He doesn't want to go with us.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And then guess what? The part of the story is the captain, Mr. Yin, he got a brother who serviced for the U.S. Navy. He's a U.S. Navy, and he's in the prison.
Oh.
And escaped the prison, joined us on the boat.
You know, I read that
in the book. He's a Navy SEAL. That guy is a Navy SEAL.
I read that, but I thought that you were, it was like a typo.
No. He's a Navy SEAL that, served for the U.S. Army, U.S. Navy.
Wow.
And then he just literally, bribed off and paid off and came out of the prison and joined us to escape the country. Okay, he's the one who's sharpening up the knife and trying to chop up that Mr. Tan. Because he's the one who realized, our bow is turning backward and our bow is being sabotaged. He knows because he's trained military guy. He's ready sharpening up the knife already. So he's going to ready to kill that guy. And then, somehow Mr. Yin stop him. He said, we no need to, have any life taken from here. Unless, let's focus on, escaping. Turn the boats around and then, see what we can fix on the boat and see. But the boat engine was not fixable.
Wow.
I think it did, ran for maybe an hour or two and then it completely
just died.
Unfixable. Yeah. From there on, it was drifting.
Wow.
And we were at the South China Sea. You know where the sandbar today China claimed is theirs?
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're at the time. And the reef was very high and the water was very shallow, and in that area people with radar to read about it, and they don't go nearby area like that because your boat can get hit on the low on the high sandbar stuff. But today they already surfaced, either the water came down or the rock grew up. But anyway, we were over there for drifting. And then first week we see big boat, ride by.
Mm-hmm.
And then we burn everything we could. We scream all we could and nobody, listening and nobody know what we're doing, I guess. And not rescuing. And then we burn whatever we have and all the shoes are gone and, whatever clothing can be burned for rescue. And so the first, I would say first week or 10 days, you see ships and boats, other out in the ocean. And then the last, after 10 days on, it was just oceans and sky. There's nothing over there.
Wow.
And then guess what? We already dehydrate when we get on. and all the dry food that is on the boat that is prepared for the trip, it was all sabotaged too. Nothing can be eaten. And all the rice they brought on board, it was already mixed with diesel. You can't eat those things. It's already been sabotaged. Everything has been sabotaged, and you can't. So nothing on there can be eaten. And then, and so basically, we have no gear for fish. We have nothing. We're just planning for two-day trip. And now we are tripping over 10 days and without water and anything. And the first week and two, there's a couple rain drop, and then you can catch it. And then we were surviving with a tablespoon or teaspoon a day, and with no food. And our body is not shutting down.
Still,
everything has been sabotaged, and you can't. So nothing on there can be eaten. And then, and so basically, we have no gear for fish. We have nothing. We're just planning for two-day trip. And now we are tripping over 10 days and without water and anything. And the first week and two, there's a couple rain drop, and then you can catch it. And then we were surviving with a tablespoon or teaspoon a day, and with no food. And our body is not shutting down.
And again, 100 so people in a boat, you're very close together, and it must be tough. Now, just real quick, so you had mentioned about the reef there, the coral reef or whatever, that
it is high, yeah.
That, but and that you all hit one and got stuck, didn't
yes.
you?
I think 2 weeks on, and our boat did land on the reef, and so it was in the middle of the night, and so our boat is a flat bottom boat, not a V bottom. So we have a 3-layer brick to stabilize the boat from, you know, because the boat is not made to get into the deep ocean.
Yeah.
It's a fisherman's boat for the lake. It's not really made for ocean type of boat or ship.
So I remember you all put a bunch of bricks in there
they stack it. 3 layers of bricks on the bottom, so all the people just sleeping on top of
it.
So basically, when we hit the reef, and the captain, you know, the Mr. Yin, said we have to relieve the wave. So all the younger, like my, including my dad and my older brother, he was 14 years old, chucking out brick over the window and line up the way. And then all the people who are 20 and up and to 50 has to get off the boat to alleviate the way. Otherwise, we are dead. So I guess see. What? These people are already, you know, 2 weeks, no food and drink. And then where are they going to find the energy?
To swim. Yeah. So they're trying to, you're trying to get people out of the boat so the boat will lift up and then move.
Yeah, because of the way. So it was rubbing the bottom. It go like, boom, you know, you're afraid the reef will cut a hole in it and you'd be done. Yeah. And then fortunately, the water rise pretty quickly. You know, within an hour, our boat floating again.
Yeah.
And now we're left with no way on the bottom. And the higher tides start coming in, the boat rock like this.
Yeah.
And we're sleeping on the bottom of the boat. We can see the ocean from the window, like 7-8 feet above. So the boat was rocking this way. You can literally see the ocean from the bottom of the boat. So it's a scary moment. And during the course of the 21 day, and 6 people die, a lot, you know, one die after the other, you know, with different problem, you know, with infection, with dehydration, with fever, whoever, you know, not feeling well will not survive. Put it that way. You have no water. Your body needs water.
Yeah.
So 6 other people died beside the lady got shot. Mm-hmm. And so during that 21 day, and after 10 or 14 day, my mom got into a situation. She turned purple. She turned purple is like turning unconscious. Mm-hmm. She's losing too much blood, the womanly cycle. Okay.
Oh, wow.
And she's turning purple. And then by chance, my dad say, pee in the can, tell all of us, where are we going to find pee? We have no drink. We squeeze everything we could from all 5 kids to pee in the can, you know, make up a little bit. My mom drink the urine. and she turned red, you know, she turned normal again.
Wow.
Guess what? From there on, everybody's drinking their own urine.
Wow. So I remember
it's just by chance, you know,
that you just were taking a chance, and it appeared that she was very, very close to death.
Yeah. And she's then, very close to death, and she turned purple already.
And your dad said to pee in this cup, and then she drank the urine.
Not a
she,
cup, it's a rusty can.
A rusty can. She drinks it and comes back to life, basically.
And then she literally comes back to life because now she's replenished, even though it's urine. And it's still, you know, we learned that people drink ocean water,
die from it.
That's why nobody, among the seven that die, some of them drink ocean water.
Yeah, I think
that's because you further dehydration your body, and then you just go into shock and done. Yeah.
So other people died, and there was a little bit more about the little girl, right? The 2-year-old girl.
The little girl among the seven died. She was the last one passed. So basically, the storm started coming. Okay, at that night. And she just died right before the storm coming. Okay, she passed 2 hours before the storm come. When the storm come, the Filipino boat came by us. Ain't that weird?
Wow.
And the Filipino boat told us, we spot you 7 days, 10 days ago, and we signal you. Nobody sees us. Nobody reply to us. Nobody trained or have gear to see, you know, somebody signaling you. And they already know you guys in a very dangerous area. Yeah. We don't go nearby there.
Very interesting. So let me back up just a little bit, Ken, about the little girl. How did she die?
She died of natural cause, dehydration, and being too long, not having food and water.
And all of these people, you obviously sent them into the ocean, right?
Yeah. We bless, and then we just put their body into the ocean.
But
and
the
guess what?
Survived.
Guess what? During the course of dumping body into the ocean, shark following us. We see shark. I saw shark behind the boat.
Following you because they...
Yeah. Because we're using old ocean water to cool us down. So my mom bought a bucket. And in fact, that bucket had lost. And Mr. Yun's brother dived in and saved the bucket. Without that bucket, everybody, you know, suffer more. Because the bucket, we use it to cook whatever that we could. You know, boiling water, steaming the ocean water for water. And you know, getting the steam,
the
condensation, and so that bucket has saved lives, and it was fell to the ocean, and he dived in and saved the bucket.
Wow.
And today I have that bucket, and I can share with you. Just give me a sec.
I want to see this. I saw a picture of it, but yes, please.
Kevin,
yes.
This bucket. My uncle made it. My mom's uncle, my great my grand uncle made it.
That is just incredible.
This is the very rope that tied to this to scoop water from the ocean to pull us down.
This
bucket already fell into the ocean. He dived in and saved it.
You know, I don't want to get too philosophical or misty-eyed about that, but I mean, I guess I just want to ask, when you look at that bucket, I mean, what does it represent to you? I mean, I'm curious to know.
It's my life saving. It's saving a lot of lives, this bucket. It was burned to like dark black, you know, with shoes and with clothing burning, and my mom cleaned it back because it's made out of stainless steel. Yeah,
just and amazing.
It's literally made by my granduncle.
That's incredible.
Yeah, he made it. Yeah, what? So it's not something you can buy.
No, that's a treasure.
That's a sentimental. Yeah. Oof,
Lord, my goodness yeah. gracious.
So I did ask my mom, I want to keep it.
Oh, goodness. I mean, well, that's just...
I had this in my cabinet, yeah.
I can only imagine. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Ken, kind of set us up for when you eventually saw the Filipino boat and this, that, and the other, so we can move into that area.